Hi, I'm Paul Cheal, and you're listening to the Public Relations Podcast, Smoke Signal. As regular listeners of this podcast will know, I'm a passionate advocate for challenging the status quo and championing best practice in public relations practice. So I'm especially pleased to welcome Shane Allison to this episode of Smoke Signal, as I know he shares the same ambition. Shane is an experienced communicator, the founder of media relationship management platform Public Address, and recently appointed president of the Public Relations Institute of Australia. Shane, thanks for joining me to talk about all things PRIA, Public Address, and ComTech ahead of your presentation this week at Mumbrella ComsCon.
Thanks, Paul. Great to be here and excited to be catching up with the industry at ComsCon. It's been a little while. I'm not sure why.
Let's start with the PRIA. I'm going to start with why you and why now. So let me elaborate on that a little. But why did you decide to take on this role and what do you hope to achieve in your term as president?
And I suppose, to be honest, you know, as with many of these things, part of it does come down to timing. I was the treasurer of the Public Relations Institute for 2 years, working closely with Lee McCluskey and Helen Hutchings. So the time was right for me to step into the role and take on the mantle of president this year. But the reason for me being involved in the PRIA has never changed. I'm a huge believer in the role of our industry association to champion for our industry, to support our industry, to recognize the great work that our industry does. And, you know, I suppose, put simply, you know, we can't afford not to have a strong industry body that is helping support our industry, helping our industry grow, and ensuring that our industry can be all it should be for public relations professionals across Australia. What do I hope to achieve? There's a bit on the plate at the moment in terms of the PRIA, but I think the most important thing for our association over the next year, and you know, hopefully if I'm re-elected for another year after that, is that our association comes out of this period stronger and with a sustainable business model so that our industry association won't fade away again in the future. There's no secret that the PRIA had a rough decade between 2010 and 2020, and we've come out of that fighting. And I think our industry association is just too important to slip backwards and not be a part of that. I suppose in terms of kind of more tactile things that are going on, we're undertaking a name change consultation to look at whether the Public Relations Institute is the right name. We're working on diversity and inclusion. We're working on the skills crisis. So there's a lot more kind of tactical stuff that we're definitely doing. But I think the legacy that I'd like to leave behind from my involvement with the PRIA is a strong industry body with long-term foundations.
So you've said it's really important there to have an industry body. I mean, it's been, what, just over 100 days since you've joined. I mean, what are you hearing and seeing from members? Are they supportive of that need for that body? Or as you say, it's been a tough decade of many kind of giving up at this point.
Well, I think in speaking with members, I'm surprised at the enthusiasm and energy for our industry association. You know, it's the passion of communicators to come together, share ideas, share best practice, recognize the great things about our industry, learn about the new trends and direction that our industry is going in, to undertake formal training like negotiation courses is really, really encouraging. I think, you know, the membership is back to growth. You know, it's honestly, it's been, I suppose, quite humbling to just kind of hear the passion and enthusiasm for our industry association and you know, the shared drive for our industry association to be better and to be everything it needs to be for practitioners across Australia.
So what do you think it's going to take for the PRIA to turn that corner? I mean, as you think about that, I'll put my view in, which is, you know, I guess when I think about an industry body, the value they add is really advocating for the profession, right? And being out there on the front foot and showing the value of the profession as a whole. Now, you've touched on a couple of things there that you are doing on that front, which is the diversity and inclusion, the skills crisis. You know, everyone I speak to in PR, there's that skills gap and we can't get enough talent. So can you talk a bit more about, you know, I know you've got some working groups set up, what you're doing on that front and how you plan to be on the front foot from that perspective?
Yeah, maybe I'll take that first part in terms of, you know, how will we tell when we've turned the corner? I think you're absolutely right. I'm incredibly proud to work in public relations and communications, and I want every single one of our members and every single person in industry to be proud of what we do. You know, far too often, you know, people are embarrassed about PR, or, you know, they're not sure what people will say. You know, they think we're spin, they think that we're, you know, misleading, covering up, that we're masters of spin who just exist to hide things. We had Chris Dorr, the, you know, editor-in-chief of The Australian, saying the other week that PR people exist to block things. And, you know, that couldn't be further from the truth. And I think you're dead right that advocacy for our industry is absolutely crucial. I think we'll know that we've turned that corner when members reliably are able to share that same passion that I have for our industry, that same pride at the impact that our industry has, and look to the PRIA as leading that charge and leading that recognition of everything that PR is and everything that PR can be. And you know, if we can deliver on that, we'll all be able to walk away incredibly proud to be members of the PRIA and incredibly proud to be communicators. Communicators do change the world. You know, we do.
Yeah, that's great to hear. I mean, I think that'd be music to the ears of everybody. So on that front, while you're talking about that and being proud of PR, I mean, an area that you and I have had some robust discussions on is this idea of the PRIA has come out and proposed a name change that's currently consulting with members on that. Now, you've just spoken about being proud to work in public relations, yet I know you're an advocate for actually we need to change the name from the Public Relations Institute of Australia because people don't recognise public relations and what it does and the breadth of what it currently does. Now, I'm firmly on the side of the fence that public relations, you know, perfectly explains what we do because it is, you know, engaging stakeholders across the breadth of communication channels. But what's your view on that and where's that at in terms of that liaison with the member base to talk about changing that name?
No, that, and I suppose, you know, there's my view on this. And, you know, I am an advocate for changing the name of our association to better reflect the external views of our industry, the changing nature of our roles, the changing nature of our profession. But that's as a member, as the president, as the, you know, chairperson of the board, I am committed to the consultation process that Deputy President Helen Hutchings has designed that will seek to canvass the views of members, because at the end of the day, I can support this as much as I want to, but the board isn't going to drive through a change that isn't endorsed and supported by members. That would be madness. That would be the antithesis of best practice in communications to undertake a Clayton's consultation. So, you know, your views and the views of all of our other members who support staying the course with the Public Relations Institute and you know, attempting to rebrand and rebadge public relations is, you know, absolutely a valid opinion, and it's one that the board is going to listen to and that our association needs to listen to. We need to have this debate. We need to have this discussion.
So what do you hope to achieve by, you know, if the name is changed, you know, what is the goal? Because as anyone who's gone through a brand refresh or change, you know, you're wiping away, by changing the name, whether it's good or bad currently, you know, you're wiping away that brand equity and starting from scratch, right? Is that really a positive position to be starting from versus just advocating for PR more vigorously?
I would argue that saying that a name change kind of wipes away the brand equity is possibly a simplistic view of the situation. I think that a name change would be an evolution of the brand of our industry association, and what our users, members, look to our association for won't change in this process in terms of the knowledge to keep you ahead, the recognition to raise your profile, the training that helps you grow, the building the credibility of our industry, influencing stakeholders like government through the Migration Task Force, and most importantly, building a sense of community around practitioners. I think what a name change can do for our organisation is make sure that we're contemporary with the changing nature of how our role is viewed by external stakeholders, CEOs, executives, government, ministers, and boards and directors, and make sure that, you know, when you turn up and take the PRIA with you to a boardroom table and say that, you know, our industry association thinks that this path would be best practice, people recognize that industry association is contemporary and relevant. Because right now I personally, and, you know, not prejudging the results of, a consultation with members around these names, I think that there's too much stigma attached to PR. I think if we were to form a working group to advise the board, you know, from an agency perspective, you'd say it would be a no-brainer to, you know, rebrand, change the name, and get rid of some of that baggage. But at the end of the day, it's going to be members who decide, and you know, members like you who hold strong opinions are exactly the kind of members that we want to engage in the consultation, because, you know, we need to be able to either take you forward as part of a rebranded association or keep you in the fold if we stay the course. We don't want to split the membership. We want everyone's voices to be heard, and we want to walk away with a position that everyone can be happy with, because otherwise we'll go down in history as the board who torched the association.
But a name change doesn't make an association contemporary and relevant, right? It's what it does. I mean, that's at the end of the day, it's going to be regardless of the name, it's going to be what value do you deliver to members and what value do you deliver to the industry?
Absolutely. And that's why, you know, our immediate strategic plan is focused on delivering value across six key pillars, and happy to name the six key pillars as well.
You don't need to ask an advisor.
Yeah, is an advisor handy to wheel these out in front of me? But no, that's, you know, the knowledge, recognition, training, community, influence, and credibility, and all of those, that member value that CEO Louise Harlan Cox is delivering, is exactly the foundation that we need to be able to carry through this name change. If we change the name and people are just rusted on because they've always been PRIA members, they think they should be PRIA members, you know, we're going to go nowhere. But if people recognize the value of membership, the value of all the work that we're doing, they'll absolutely stay the course, and the members will carry that brand equity from the PRIA to a new name. And, you know, I think this is such an opportunity for growth for us as well. If we reposition and we position towards, you know, where people are playing now. Last year we had, in our initial consultation with members, we had, you know, overwhelming support for a name change at the time, but some division around whether it should be communication or communications. And so, you know, that kind of split the pack on that. But I think, you know, I think our members do recognize the opportunity for change, the opportunity for growth, and the opportunity to make sure that our organization is sustainable into the future. Because if our organization is sustainable, then issues that we're working on at the moment, like the Migration Task Force, and the skills crisis, those issues won't arise because we're already a step ahead of them. We're already addressing them. We've got a PRIA office that is driving this incredibly important work to address things like that.
I think you're totally right. I mean, I think there is incredibly important work there, and especially on the skills piece. That's much more important than whether it's PRIA, communications, right? You know, it's about that execution. And someone who's been a proud member of the PRAA for over a decade, you know, I would say that I've seen, you know, over the last 6 to 12 months, some really positive signs. I guess just hopeful it's not a false dawn and that it continues, you know, over the long term.
And that's what I think, you know, to continue over the long term, we need to attract new members. We need to attract a growing member base. Our member base has been in decline for a decade. You know, it's almost the, you know, and again, I want to emphasize that the most important thing will be what our members think about the potential for a name change. You know, the board is not ramming this through. There's no Clayton's consultation. We are committed to understanding what our members think and then taking action on that. And so, you know, we'll see what happens in the consultation. I could be entirely wrong. You know, I've been wrong in my life, but this is, you know, a point that I particularly passionately believe in. And so I hope that I'm not wrong.
Well, it is great to have someone with your passion and enthusiasm and commitment to the profession leading the Public Relations Institute of Australia. Let's turn our attention and put your other hat on, ComTech. I mean, this is an obvious passion of mine and something I'm focusing more on, having now come onto the communication dividend. And it's something you've been pioneering with public address. I mean, in itself, ComTech feels like a relatively new term, something we've, you know, maybe stolen from marketing with their MarTech that's been around much longer. It also feels like most tech or most PR firms, and when they talk about tech, whether that's agency or in-house, you know, they're talking about collaboration tools, workflow planning, media monitoring platforms. But I mean, it's more than that, right? I mean, how do you see the current use of tech by PR, by the PR teams, and how do you think this needs to evolve?
It's funny, I was speaking yesterday to a senior leader in public relations communication, and he said to me that, you know, we're very good at pitching stories about machine learning, artificial intelligence, virtual reality, the metaverse, you know, the amount of spin that communicators have put into the metaverse in the past three months or so is incredible. And yet we haven't actually turned that ability to talk about technology externally, internally to the way that we work. You know, we're still bringing juniors into the industry, talented, incredibly talented juniors, straight out of university, turn up day one, and what do? I mean,
media monitoring, reporting.
Media lists,
yep.
Stakeholder lists, Excel.
A lot of Excel.
And, you know, I can't imagine anything that would turn a communication graduate or just a university graduate off more than trawling through Excel day in, day out for a year and a half, 2 years. There is simply no excuse for our industry to be subjecting, you know, these talented young minds to this drudge work when there are alternatives available.
Who come in and say, I want to do strategy, issues management, writing, content.
And I certainly believe that, you know, you don't come out of university ready to, you know, to run the dream world crisis, but you should come out of university and, you know, not to put my Perrier hat back on for too long, but we are hopefully going to be looking at the accreditation program in the next 12 to 18 months, which will look at help to improve the skills that come out of university. But the idea that, you know, you come out of university wanting to spend all day in Excel is just crazy. You don't. They've got more value to add. And so this conversation that I was having yesterday was about how do we actually use ComTech to free up these people's time and give them more time to work on writing, creativity, content, strategy, working with clients, working with stakeholders and businesses.
Adding real value.
So look, it's, you know, and as you've experienced with the communication dividend, you know, the opportunity for ComTech is huge to change the way that we work as communicators to add more value to our profession. But I think we're a bit adverse. I mean, as we know, as communicators, everyone is adverse to change. But I think we've been a bit stuck in the mud in terms of how we how we look at and how we think about technology. And we haven't adopted a technology-driven mindset, which we need to do in order to actually progress and change the way we operate. And, you know, maybe an example of a technology-driven mindset is with the latest release of Public Address, you can go in, you can search for journalists who have covered your company and add all of those journalists to a list. And so that's the kind of, manual task where currently people are going through and looking at media clippings reports and relying on their memory and Googling to find the journalists who have covered their company to add them to a distribution list for a new announcement. Whereas now, I love that new feature. I think it's great, but we need to be moving that to the point where you're able to set automatically every journalist that covers your company goes onto a media list and is part of your future announcements. And that's when we can free up junior time, we can free up senior time, because let's face it, machines are more reliable at doing that kind of work. Like if it's a repetitive task, like calculating media value, calculating the negative positive in an article, all of those kind of tasks, machines generally do it far more accurately, less subjectively than humans can. And we just, I think we've been a bit afraid to turn that mindset to our own industry.
A couple of the challenges I see are, one, I think it's awareness of what are the products out there that you could use, what's the tech available, but also that idea of having to invest, and I mean, I come probably more from an agency perspective on this, but having to invest in these tools when you've currently got existing headcount that can do it. So you're kind of seeing this as an additional spend, but where I see it is you're actually making that headcount more effective and efficient and adding real value versus sitting there doing lists and reporting. They can actually do other things that add insight and value, makes their job more interesting and makes them more valuable for the agency and more valuable for the client.
And we've been talking about value-based pricing forever, right? Like everyone's, I feel like value-based pricing has been around since the advent of the agency and we still haven't cracked it. But ComTech is exactly the kind of thing that can help crack that. If you used to bill, 3 hours for a junior staff member to compile a media dashboard, and you can do that in 30 minutes with the communications dividend, then you should be charging the 3 hours. That is let's say $600 of value that the client is receiving. But you're right, that's a very different mindset. It's something where, a media list or a media coverage report can be a product, not a service that's reliant on people's time to actually deliver.
So you're presenting this month at ComsCon, Umbrella ComsCon, on ComTech, which is great to see it up in lights. Your session is called The Challenges, Pitfalls, and Opportunities of Building Your ComTech Stack. So can you give us a bit of a sneak preview, and talk us through some of those challenges, pitfalls, and opportunities when it comes to ComTech?
I suppose, and maybe we can focus in on the challenges and opportunities. I'll keep the pitfalls for the audience this week. And I think the challenges are twofold. One, as an industry, we are scared of automation. We are worried that automation will take away our jobs. But the good news is that PR, there's about 20% of the work that we do that is automatable, but the rest of that is creativity that is at least in the next 30 to 40 to 80 years, robot-proof. We should not be scared of automation. We should be embracing it. The second challenge is that to get ComTech implemented, we need to go and talk to the IT team. And, I know that the IT team and the comms team are a bit like oil and water at times, but the IT team are our best friends when it comes to implementing ComTech and building our own ComTech stacks. And I think the opportunity is really twofold. One, ComTech can help us achieve better results. I use the analogy of weather forecasting. You know, we rely on weather forecasts, which are incredibly complex models that look at past weather patterns and run hundreds of thousands of scenarios using supercomputers to predict whether it's going to rain today. We can achieve the same thing with the patterns and the results that we see in communications to analyze all that data and provide predictions in terms of who's going to cover a story, which influencer is best to engage with, so on and so forth. But we also know that at times we think the weather forecast is wrong and we take an umbrella even though the weather forecast says it's going to be really sunny today because we look out the window and, you know, last time there were clouds like that, it rained. So I'll take an umbrella. And so I think the kind of opportunity is that we can deliver better results through tapping into ComTech. And I think the longer-term opportunity is a bit of what we've talked about already, the ability to actually free up junior staff time, resources, and to make everyone, you know, make everyone happier, make everyone more fulfilled at work, you know, get rid of that drudge work, get rid of that, you know, get rid of the Excel spreadsheets. You know, I envision a future in which Excel will not be one of our most used tools in public relations and communications. I mean, how good would that be?
I think that's a pipe dream. I mean, I think you've just given me my headline there that the PR are scared of automation. So how does that, I mean, it's a pretty bold statement. How does that manifest? Is that they just avoid thinking about it, avoid trying to bring it in? I mean, what are you seeing from the conversations you're having? How have you come to that kind of realization?
I think we're scared of automation, and I think that manifests in kind of what we look for in tools. You know, we're very happy to continue to have faster horses when the marketing profession has gone and gotten whole new forms of transportation. And so we're very happy to have, you know, the media contacts database hasn't really changed in 40 or 50 years. Sure, it's gone online and we can now search. We don't need, you know, a new edition every 3 months. But by large, the content is the same. The way we use that is the same. Same with media monitoring. Sure, we don't get it on the fax machine. We get it in a portal and we can search more of it. But the actual service that we get from media monitoring hasn't changed since the first press clippings were run as part of a service in, you know, Melbourne in, I think, the 70s into what is now iCentia. And so I think it's a mindset thing. We need to look at tasks and go, this is something that we can automate. This is something that we can not have to do again. And I think there are some really forward-thinking practitioners who are leaning into that and driving that conversation and driving those opportunities, like the leader that I was talking to yesterday. And I think that, you know, those early adopters will bring a lot of people in behind them. And I think I'm actually quite optimistic about this because I think, you know, in public relations we are quite kind of, we like to go with the crowd. And so, you know, there will be a few early adopters, but the majority will follow quite quickly behind because they will see the potential, they'll see the results that people are able to achieve, and they'll see how it's able to address and alleviate not just the skills crisis, but making people happier and more fulfilled at work. And that's what we need to do as an industry if we want to be able to grow and attract the best and brightest into public relations and communications.
Yeah, I think there is such an opportunity for those early adopters to, you know, be on the forefront of best practice, right, and be able to take that forward. Because organizations want their PR and comms teams to be delivering that, right? They don't want them to be just doing it the way it's always been done. They want to know that, you know, we're moving forward and we're doing it the best way we can, whether that's, you know, showing our value or doing things more efficiently, whatever that may look like. And technology obviously has a key role to play in that.
Totally. I think, you know, quite often our stakeholders look at it, us and go, oh, these guys are a bit behind in terms of, you know, what they're doing and how they're doing it. And they're looking for us to catch up as well. And I think people are quite often surprised at how much support they get internally when, you know, a comms team or an agency has these discussions. People are enthusiastic about this and enthusiastic about us catching up with marketing because we have fallen behind.
So if a PR practitioner is listening or sitting in on your ComsCon session this week, I mean, what would be the one thing they should think about or start doing when it comes to ComTech?
Obviously, the standout first would be to sign up for public address and the second would be to sign up for the communication dividend. But no, I think it's I actually do believe that this is a highly individual journey for every professional and every team who undertakes it. And what I encourage people to do in the ComTech Users Guide is to actually start to get their data house in order. So right now, all of the data that we have as communicators is, well, lost in Excel spreadsheets. It's spread in our Outlook inboxes and sent items. It's in a myriad of platforms and it's inaccessible, it's unstructured. And that lack of data is one of the things that's holding that the structure, the lack of structured data is one of the things that's holding back our profession. So the thing that, you know, I'd love people to take away from the session is that it's never too early or too late to start getting your data house in order, to actually, you know, start to use a CRM, to start to maintain even just consistent formatting across your media lists, so that in the future, when you go to suck those into a platform like Public Address or, God forbid, one of our competitors, it's an easy process and you're able to immediately extract value from that. So it sounds more complicated than it is, but just kind of starting to get your data house in order is such a valuable first step for our profession.
Yeah, that ComTech User Guide is available on the Public Address website. I'd recommend people download that and have a read because it is quite valuable to look at that landscape of the ComTech. I mean, I guess what I'd say is, I've done quite a lot of reading in this space and I'm still surprised by how many tools are out there, right? So there's not going to be one size fits all. It's going to be about what are you looking to achieve and what do you need for your organization. You know, even the other day I came across an AI-powered video producer, right? Which is you put in the text, you pick an avatar, and the video looks like, it's presenting a video with the text that you've put in, which is just an awesome way to create a cheap video that doesn't need a lot of budget, but looks quite professional. So there's so many tools out there, and it's really about what are you looking to achieve in your comms program.
Totally. And that's the kind of thing, video editing right now is absolutely quite, manual, but even just things like selecting the best cuts for a video to go into a video, that's stuff that, I now use Adobe Premiere Pro and I can generate a transcript of a video on my device and do a paper edit of that video and cut down the time that it used to take to kind of download that video, upload that, and that's probably not a great example because it's not strictly speaking ComTech, but you're right. These tools and platforms are multiplying and the opportunity is astounding. It blows me away what the potential is, to be honest.
So let's wrap up with a pretty big question, but one I think you're pretty clear on is you've talked with your PRA hat on, you've talked with your ComTech hat on. What's your vision for the profession from both those perspectives?
I think my vision for our industry is that we can achieve our full potential as professionals and as an industry. How the world views communications and public relations has changed dramatically throughout the pandemic. And we're at a point in time where the world is crying out for the influence that we can help people drive. It's crying out for people who can create earned attention. The lead keynote at ComsCon this week is Thinkabell, which is an advertising agency that happens to have an earned media division. And the earned media division is what's making people excited about them. And so I think if we can be proud of communicators, if we can be proud of the work that we can do, if we can unlock the potential of our industry through automating and getting rid of some of that low-value work that can be done better by machines, I think our industry will be in a position to really take a seat at the C-suite table, take a seat at the board table, and leverage the kind of influence that we've, you know, given over to our marketing brethren who, you know, let's be honest, generally waste it and aren't driving the same kind of positive change that I think good communication can.
Fantastic, Shane. Well said. It's always great. I always enjoy our conversations because I know, you know, you just have that passion for the profession. So good luck at ComsCon and good luck with your time as president of the PRAA. We'll be watching closely.
And I'll be looking forward to you engaging in the name change consultation and more vigorous debates about whether we should be polishing up public relations or rebranding and rebadging.
I look forward to it. Thanks, Shane.
Thanks, Paul.
I am Paul Cheel, and you've been listening to Smoke Signal. Thank you for listening, and as always, remember to rate Smoke Signal on iTunes or subscribe via the blog. Just search Smoke Signal Podcast.